Yeah. What's up, everybody? Rated PG, Neon City Horror. This week, we got another awesome indie filmmaker interview coming out of Instagram. We sat down with Zoe and Malachi from Path Films regarding their new project called Vampire. That's with a B. So it's like it's a story about the idea of like a vampire, but instead of taking the bat form, it takes a shape of a deer, almost like a, I don't want to give too much away because I want you guys to hear it for yourselves. But the premise is that it's like a vampire style deer. So play on the Bambi, kind of form vampire. I'm doing it no justice. Zoe and Malachi are going to fucking knock it out of the park and tell you everything about the project. One of the things with this one is that the Indiegogo closes on it on April 12th, so there is still time for everyone to reach out to vampiremovie.com, Indiegogo.com. You can search for Vampire, again, with a B, and you can find different ways to contribute. Also, it does close on the 12th, but they are still keeping it open for donations as well, so if you want to just donate something to kind of help move the project come along, then you guys can always feel free to do that. We had a really good time talking with Zoe and Malachi. We had to edit it down. We went for a really long time. So I hope you enjoy the final product. But again, make sure you're following them on Instagram at Vampire. You can look up Path Films as well. And they got a few things on YouTube, but their main focus is the Vampire movie. And we're wishing them all the best of luck. And we hope to see a lot of stuff coming out from their camp, after Vampire. So, all right, enjoy. Peace.
Hello.
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 Hey, what's up?
What up?
Howdy.
What's going on, man? Hello.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
I'm good.
Living it up.
Yeah. Enjoying the sunlight that is still 7 o'clock in the afternoon. I love it.
Yeah, we had to kind of like cover one of our windows over here because it was getting a little bit too hot, too much signal.
So got it.
A little dark, but
I thought you guys were embracing the 90s era goth, you know, let's put the lights down, light a candle.
Let's say that, you know, we'll go with that.
I like it.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
There you go.
Okay, everyone do our vocal exercises and then we'll get started.
That's even better.
Hey. Nice to meet you guys. I'm Zoe.
My name's Malachi.
I know it's cheating though, because like I just listened to the VHS Doom podcast episode with you guys and I was like, I already know them. It's fine.
Oh, it's awesome that you guys saw that though. He was so great to work with.
Dylan's the best. We love VHS Doom. We met them. We came across their show a few months ago and it was just so different from a lot of the horror podcasts that we subscribe to. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have listened to anything outside of, you know, your guys' episode, but there's a lot of production that goes on in that show and there's a lot of character building and they have different kind of elements to it and it makes it really engaging. So it helped make itself stand out from the rest. And so, I don't know, I like to think that we do things a little different too. So I was instantly drawn to it. And then we made friends on Instagram and then we've done a collab episode and we're going to do another one. And it's been great. So we can't say enough good things about VHS Doom.
We'll join that club.
So why don't we start off like by introducing each other? So Mutant City Horror, you know, we're a horror review podcast. And we started years ago on YouTube primarily. And we found that doing video stuff from an editing perspective was a lot of work. And I have a wife and two kids and, you know, a full-time job and it keeps me super busy. So I was like, scratch that noise. Our other co-host Matt was like, let's just do audio. So we started doing audio, but then we started integrating other stuff and that's become a little bit of a workhorse itself. But ideally we started the podcast just for Matt and I to hang out and, you know, we've known each other since 95 and we've always just kind of sat around, got drunk, watched movies, horror movies specifically, a lot of foreign stuff, a lot of low budget stuff. Now we're, you know, north of 40 and separated by time and distance. So we thought the podcast would be a good idea to kind of hang out and still do that thing and still, you know, have homie time. And, you know, it's been going really well. So we met Alan in 2001, and then he's been a homie ever since. And then we just recently folded him into the show. So Alan's kind of new himself. Heck yeah. That's right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, you got free time? Not anymore. Come on over.
Our lights off. That's
weird. Oh, yeah.
I'll be right back.
That's what it is. Good. Sorry, we just realized half of our lighting setup is not actually on.
Ah, got it. Yeah. Got it.
So that makes a lot of sense. But now we're not edgy anymore, guys.
It's okay.
Did we ruin the vibe?
Yeah. No, not at all. Actually, now we can see more of the 90s aesthetic, and I vibe with that, so I'm all good.
Absolutely. Real big fish. That's what's up.
Yeah.
We actually got to use their just their like promotional stuff, their merch in our movie, because Taylor had done like a ska documentary, actually, as one of his first projects, our director, Taylor Morton.
Yep.
And so he like ended up interviewing all of these amazing bands, and both Malachi and I are like punk fans. So the second that he was like, yeah, we could get Real Big Fish, we were like, what?
Nice.
In our movie? We've been trying to talk to them about using some of their music, but ultimately they like have, you know, released it through a distributor who now owns the rights to it primarily. So the merch they could give us like for free. Yeah, but for the music and stuff, it was like still going to cost us like 10 grand.
That's
so
the
maybe like in our highest dreams, like we make a ton of money through this Indiegogo and like exceed all of our goals, then like maybe we get one of their songs.
Yeah.
So. No, what we'll do is we'll pull them into the studio and have them do the Real Big Fish version, right?
Yes.
Like the Taylor version. Except...
For real, that
I love
work.
That. Yeah,
that could work.
We played with the idea of even doing like a live band or something at one of like the premieres, or not the premiere, but like in the future, doing like, you know, a live soundtrack viewing of Vampire.
That'd be cool.
Because we just thought it'd be so fun. Like it's such a crazy, campy, wild project that it might be suited for that kind of multimedia.
Kind of like how they do with video games now, where you can get like go and see like an orchestral rendition of video game music, and then they play
exactly
the
that
stuff in the background. Except it's awesome 90s campy horror movies. I love it.
Yes, you get it.
So
you see the
vision. So who do I give my money to?
Yeah,
right.
www.vampiremovie.com. We take all money.
There you go. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Okay. Well. I am an actor, and I found out that I wanted to be an actor when I was like 20 years old. So I hadn't done any acting before then at all. And
so like 2 years ago, because you look like you're 22.
Oh, I'm 30. I'm 30, bro. I've been living, you know, real. I'm 30. So I've been acting for like 10 years now. And in Eugene, there's not a ton of acting opportunities. So like I've done a lot of shorts and like student films, that kind of stuff. And finally got good at it after like, you know, 7 or 8 years. And so now I've really been kind of ready to progress into like the next step in my acting career. And it's either move outside of Eugene or find all of my work outside of Eugene, or build projects here and try to bring that professional work into town. And so knowing Zoe, she's an incredible writer, and I was like, okay, well, if you can write something good, maybe like I can help put together the production, and maybe we can, you know, really make a film that is at like this high enough quality to be impactful to our careers. So that's what Vampire turned into. But yeah, basically me, I'm just like a local kid. I was born like in the woods outside of Eugene, in a cabin, literally. And I have just been, you know, kind of like working really hard to get out of, to just find that next step in my life.
Yeah, I get it. What was it about acting that you were like, that's the thing for me?
Well, I realized like at that point in my life, like I was a generalist. Like I'm kind of good at a lot of things, but there's nothing that I'm like exceptional at. And acting was a really good avenue for me to keep exploring my interest in like a bunch of different hobbies, but without having to just like fixate on one for the rest of my life. So I realized like, oh, I'm really an emotional guy, and I have a sense of like what works and what doesn't work in art. And like, oh, heck, if I was an actor, Maybe I could like learn how to box a little just for one role, and then go shoot laser guns for the next role. And
Dude, that's awesome.
yeah, it
Pure
was like the
motives.
one thing that could
Yeah.
for sure keep my interest for the rest of my life, is that's kind of what it popped up as, of like, I'm gonna get sick of every other job, but acting I could keep doing forever.
Yeah, I never thought about it like that, right? Because kids, when they grow up, and even some adults, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, fireman. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a teacher. It's like, well, if you're an actor, you could be all those things, pretty
And you
consistently.
cut out the middleman on it all, right? Like, I don't have to do 8 years of school, like,
Right.
for each.
I just have to look like I'm good at it from one very specific angle.
The power of editing, it works wonders. Well, that's
And
awesome.
lighting.
Is there a, yeah, is there anything like in your portfolio that you can like point us back to where we might be able to say, oh, there's Malachi, or something that we can go and watch and
Yeah. So
discover your talents?
the first one that's really good is actually Zoe's first short film as a director and writer. It's called Don't Touch Me. And you're gonna have to go to YouTube and enter in like "Don't Touch Me," and then like scene, like a scene in Eugene, and that's how you'll get to it, because it's from this little local volunteer-based episodic thing called "Scene in Eugene," and that's
Got
how we got
it.
it. Pretty.
Got it.
But I
Yeah, I would
act in that.
imagine a YouTube search of Don't Touch Me is going to produce a lot of different videos that I may not
Yeah,
want
you'll get a mixed bag.
to watch.
I act in that though, and it's one of the roles I'm the most proud of. And it's a really great local piece. Also, though, I've done a couple local features. One that's called Maxine, is about drug addicts and is really like intense, jarring experience. You'll be exhausted at the end of the film.
Sure.
And so a really really wild, crazy, thrown together stoner comedy I did that's called We Need Rent Money. I would say don't maybe. If you want to watch a couple of local feature films that are both intense, and you can see my growth after them, those would
Nice.
be. But I would
Yeah.
say just maybe watch Don't Touch Me. It's a really nice, concise, well done piece.
May not appreciate it, but yeah.
Yeah.
We've been like, one of the things that we've really been focusing on is, taking this talent that we have seen and this drive that has made several like pretty good feature films and also a couple pretty good short films, and actually like harness, the energy that we've seen being put into these products and kind of redirect it toward a project that really has every single station filled. So taking all of like the talent, all of the drive, all of these spirits that we've met doing all of these, ultimately like wonderful projects, some of which just didn't turn out for a variety of reasons. A lot of it is just not having enough people, not having, one person specifically fill each of these like really important roles, even of being a director and a, cinematographer and, an actor, and having people just try to take on like two or three of those at a time. And it just gets really chaotic, and the product ends up suffering for it. And so a lot of what we experienced was like, wow, look at these talented people. Look at what we're so close to achieving. How can we kind of like take that energy that both he and I had like worked with for, him 10 years, but me almost 4 or 5 years in our community, and just kind of like I said, redirect it toward a project that has enough of those folks to actually get close to filling each one of those jobs. So it's all of these folks that we've worked with for quite a few years now, doing their projects or doing, working with them on other people's projects. And Vampire is the result of all of those folks coming together just for the like love of filmmaking, and to really put in like all of the effort we have into trying to make something that's really a usable product. So we've just really pulled like as much of the amazing quality and talent together that we've been able to find and like literally seen come to fruition in our community, and have just guided it along with our other producers, Taylor Morden and Emily Claire. We've just really all focused on creating an environment that those local resources could really thrive in. Because we just kept seeing these amazing things almost happen, and then for some reason they'd get shut down or it wouldn't turn out, and we were just tired of seeing that happen to artists that really deserve like a pretty massive portfolio of wonderful work after working this long. So yeah, like that was our biggest focus, was like, how can we keep it positive? How can we get these people to all want to keep working, volunteer at a very small scale for just a little longer, so that we can hopefully bring, make something amazing and then bring more opportunity to our community?
That's
Because
awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, It's almost like a kind of stars align type scenario, right? You're in the right place, you're meeting the right people, you're recognizing talent, and then, you know, opportunity comes around and let's execute, and then you end up putting something to, you know, something together really special, and that's, you know, Vampire. And, yeah, you know, from what we've seen in your Indiegogo with the teaser and, you know, the stuff that we've seen on Instagram, it looks great. And, you know, for a kind of indie film, you know, low budget type project, the look of it and the quality of it looks really great, at least from what we've seen so far.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
We broke our backs to make that thing. We were out in the middle of the woods just moving lights, you know, as much as they needed to be moved to make the right shot. It was a lot.
Yeah.
Heavy lights, uneven terrain, pretty much.
There's that lighting I mentioned.
Yeah. So Zoe, how do you get into the mix?
So ultimately, I've been kind of a writer my whole life, but not doing narrative stuff. So not a lot of stories. A lot of research writing, a lot of not fun writing for school, writing about books, not writing books. And ultimately it wasn't until I had kind of like fully decided to really put my energy into becoming a narrative writer that I discovered that you could write movies. Who knew? Like, I was trying to write theater plays and books and things that are lovely and massively important to our culture, but just are not the number one product that we're like exporting in America, unlike movies, entertainment. We've done like a really good job as a society making that something that we have a very strong presence in. And part of me was like, well, if I want my, you know, my skill to be able to be shown, then I should go into a medium where it has an opportunity to actually gain an audience. And that actually was part of like what inspired me to start writing movies, was just how accessible they are, and how you can write this piece and bring it to life. And it's not a solo project. It's something that you do with, you know, 20 or 30 other people, and they all help you bring this thing to life instead of kind of having to rely on it to tell the story on its own, like a book would. So when I got into movie making, what really drew me was the visual aspects, but the teamwork and the fact that I would get to work with a bunch of artists to make a story come to fruition. And then the fact that it was in a medium that was being like very appreciated in my culture felt like, well, how'd I never thought of this before? How'd I not consider movie writing in all these years? I was trying to find a way to explore that side of myself in a more fun, just kind of creative way. So I've met this amazing artist as a part of my local filmmaking community, and he was already acting and encouraged me to go act, and then encouraged me to bring some of my screenplays into the light of day. And luckily, everyone else in that group was really supportive too of having a new artist kind of in their midst, and they helped me produce, like Malachi was mentioning, Don't Touch Me, which was my first ever screenplay that I'd really like fully fleshed out and finished. Although I had, again, just loved storytellings and loved movies my whole life, I just never considered writing them for some reason. And once I just unlocked that and allowed myself to go for it, now it's all I can think about. So I don't know, it feels like a bit of a stroke of luck in my life that I ended up here and not in like some laboratory or like writing research papers somewhere. But I'm so happy that I get to like tell just human stories in a way that like is appreciated in my culture right now. And the fact that I have a local support to do that, and a business partner that's just been an incredible like motivating force and actually taking on a lead role in my projects, and you know, allowing them to really be expressed in that, to that degree that like I feel at least that they deserve to be shown and, you know, brought to life into the world. Just the fact that I had even one other artist who was willing to take on such a big part of that, being a lead actor, helping me produce these things, was massively encouraging. But then to have the rest of the filmmaking group that I didn't even know at the time step up and say, yeah, you're new, I like you, we'll make it. Completely changed my life in a way that I don't even know that most of them realize, like where I was at to where I am now.
Right.
Total change of path for me. Films, that's why I named it that.
There you go. See, full circle. Okay,
so you know, Zoe, I'm sorry.
No, go for it, dude.
I heard in there that you had talked about how through writing movies, you're finding the ability to create that vision that like you kind of were capturing in through other forms of the medium, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't help but notice that like you also have like some credits with like costume design, casting, assistant direct. So like it seems like that vision really kind of You want to paint that picture in every element, it seems like. Is that seem
Yes.
accurate?
I mean, I love writing, but the reason I love writing is that it's a way to describe what's in my head. And so, like, really bringing what's in my head into reality is the part that I'm passionate about. You know, that's why I'm not a novelist. Like, that's why I'm not, you know, creating a movie that can be just reinterpreted in everyone's brain, whoever reads it. I want to create something that's like visually different. And, you know, getting my hands into the medium of writing for screen, it's very different. It's like there's no consistent narrative that you're telling where you're in someone's head and you know exactly what they're smelling and you know exactly what they're feeling. You don't get to do any of that. You have to show the audience. You have to make them experience it. You have to provide an image that provokes those sensations powerfully enough that you get across the point. You get across all that subtlety, but it's with music and what they're wearing and where you've set it. And you have one shot. You don't have a million reinterpretations. You have one scene to do it all in, and if they don't get it, there's no con, like you can't go back, they can't call me, you know, and reread it. So there is a bit like a maybe of like a higher stakes, higher pressure element to it that I also really enjoy, but a huge part of why I've gone on to like not just write screenplays and sell them but produce them as well is because I love the production design. I love bringing all of that forward. And you'll find a lot of that is contained in my writing as well. Very sensory writer. I love writing the story itself. But the way that I ended up just blossoming as a writer was through realizing what I enjoyed was provoking that sensation and the subtlety of it. And that's really more the place for a movie, than it is for a novel, where you do kind of have to. I'm going to use the word spoon feed your audience a little bit, but it's because they only have this one tool to interpret your story. You don't have a performance and a director and the writer and the production designer all working, you know, to help you. You have words on a page. You choose what people get to read. So it's super different, but I think like that's a huge, what you're commenting on is really why I've decided to become a movie producer as well as a screenplay writer, because you could be one or the other, you know, and have all that same love for either one.
Well, it's like to Malachi's point earlier, where you have a passion for a lot of different things as opposed to just one singular thing. And so, why restrict yourself to that one thing? Spread it around, see what you like, do a lot of
Absolutely.
different things. Yeah.
That's, I feel I relate with Malachi's journey in that way a lot.
Nice.
I also noticed that with Path Films, there is a phrase that said quality narrative. And like that like two word phrase I thought was pretty poignant. And hearing you describe your passion behind the project and your journey, I see where quality narrative comes from.
It's definitely a high standard, but I want to meet it.
Okay, so I kind of want to get into two parts here. We interview a lot of, and we spotlight and try to promote a lot of indie filmmakers, specifically in the horror genre. So, one thing I want to start getting better at, because a lot of people listen to the show, is showcasing how somebody might be able to go about doing what you guys are doing. Because we talk a lot about the process and the filmmaking and the final product, but we haven't really talked a lot about like the first step, right? So, I think it's important to kind of put that out there so people can hear that and, draw some inspiration from your guys' story. And then I do eventually want to get into Vampire, but I want to transition in there through, this is a horror movie, this is a horror podcast, so we're gonna talk a little bit of horror before we do that. So be ready for that. But we'll start with the
Cool.
process first. So what is it like for someone like you guys to start putting together a movie for the very first time?
Well, sitting back and watching all the projects that I've seen be made for those 10 years in a local sense, it's clear. It's like it's a fact. The first step is a script. You're all gonna base the entire plan for production off of that script. And so you need to find the right script for your local, resources and the right script for your budget. And that could be really limiting. So trying to find the right way to creatively use what you do have and what is going to be free and what is going to be your best friend can act this role really well. So you know that's a role you could do. On the very smallest level, you need to start being realistic with your script and that also pertains sometimes even to just like, okay, do we have an actor who can really pull off super long monologues? Or do we have to write a script that isn't full of super long monologue heavy scenes for one actor? Just what do we have around us? And you're going to start writing a script and you're going to try to keep it under those constraints, but then you're going to realize like, oh, this script would be way better if I just let myself write this character a big monologue because it
Right.
fits here. And so you have to be realistic, but also you don't want to stifle your own creativity ever, right? So you got to try to say yes and adapt to like fail upwards or like it's not what you planned in the first half, it's not what you wanted, but now you found a way to make it work, and you can add that to your script. So you get a good script that's realistic, and then you need just a team of people to help you make it. So all this work could be put into a script. And then if you don't have any local filmmakers that you can use as a resource, you're still kind of at ground zero on that level. And the best way to meet local filmmakers is just to go anywhere and everywhere online and to local schools or whatever you can. Try to find like a Facebook group for your local city filmmakers and just meet them. Just start going on set. Meet the ones who have a good attitude and who are reliable. And make sure that you form relationships with the ones you enjoy and the ones that are reliable, because at some point, you're gonna need to have done them enough favors to then be like, hey, I know it's not paid, it's just my first short film, but will you please come here like every Saturday for a month or something like that?
Yeah.
Money is obviously the way to circumvent that.
Yeah, of
Like, you could pay
course.
for a team,
Yeah.
that's great. And a lot of writers out there, like, I know. My homies, the people at their computer desks typing all day,
Sure.
they don't want to go out and meet all the people that they need to make their project. So just to like yes to all of what he said, but in addition to that, making your story something that you really believe in, something that you think is relatable, something that you've created as honest artwork. It's something that you've genuinely generated from yourself. That ability to create relatable artwork, something that people read and want to be a part of, that's how you get those people involved who don't owe you anything. And I know that that in and of itself can be difficult to write that, but also to just find someone who has written that or is even capable or has even a concept that you could then go write. It's still networking, it's still creative, it's still, utilizing the resources that you have, whether that's you or someone else. But if you can create a relatable piece of artwork, other people will read that story and connect with it. And that's how you get 20 people to show up and work as hard as they can every single day to make sure that your short, like first short film isn't a total mess, even when you have gone through all of these steps, because every person is showing up to tell a piece of art, like tell a story or create a piece of artwork that they think is honest and can be impactful, and they have their own reasons for being there. That's one of the benefits of hooking up with other filmmakers is that if you do make something great, they have the personal adage of this is mine and it's in my
Right.
portfolio, and that's all very positive. But if you don't have those favors and you can't just rely on, your friends to show up for you, then what you really need to focus on is that original story, putting together a good working document that other people can use and work off of and believe in and read and know, man, if this was done right, it could be incredible. Because otherwise, there's never that first thought of what if it was great? Like, yes, this is cool, but what if this was great? And we actually put in all of this time and energy that you're really asking for. Like, when you start in on a project, you got to be prepared to work with them for 6 months to a year, sometimes
Right.
upwards of, a year in our case for our project so far. So, it's a big commitment that you're asking from for people.
Yeah,
That's
100%.
we were recently talking with one of our friends James over at Tooth Brain Productions, and he lives it outside of the mainstream Hollywood, making small budget films himself, or no budget films. And one of the things he had talked about is getting talent, getting someone who's like a gaffer and understands how to operate a boom mic and, little things like that to be able to make the projects a little bit bigger. Eugene isn't necessarily a large popular, large production area, it seems like. Do you guys tend to deal with the same issues, like
Oh, yeah.
finding?
Yeah, we were one of the first projects to bring in like local, or sorry, non-local talent. So we cast locally as much as we could, but we have a large ensemble of young actors. So we have a lot of very talented young actors in Eugene, but it's different. It's not like just about being talented. It's about being the right pick for the role. You know, you could be very talented and you're still not the right pick for the role. So we cast our net pretty wide. And we knew that we wanted to cast local as much as humanly possible. Our whole crew was local. But for those bigger roles, we'd also had to, you know, reach outside who we knew. And we ran a national casting campaign through Backstage. And we had conversations with all of them like, hey, this is going to be the kind of project it is. It's going to be 3 weeks in the woods, like harsh conditions. We'd like you to take as little money as you can because we don't have much to give. And everything that we don't put into someone's pocket goes into the project. So that's where we're at. We were super honest, very upfront with people about what level we were at, which is why, like, I can't believe they said yes. But these people showed up, and not only did they say yes, not only did they come to rehearsals all summer online, they gave everything that they had to this project, emotionally, spiritually, energetically. They went above and beyond. And I think a big part of that was because we were genuine with them from the get-go. Like, this is what you're signing up for. We'd never ask you to do something you weren't comfortable with. Please join us on this crazy journey, but things might not go as we're planning, even if we have all these great resources. And all of them were like, you know what? Okay. And, you know, 6 months later, we all got together and made a movie. And by all rights, that movie should have turned out terrible because we were asking them to do something that was like, by, you know, on page, totally impossible. But we'd planned well enough and we adapted every time we hadn't planned well enough. And together, because we had 20 people there who, including these actors, who just wanted to be there to help tell this story as best they could, somehow we all, every single day, held together and actually got this thing done in 3 weeks, working 16-hour days.
Nice.
And, you know, for the most part, we actually didn't have people complaining that much, which is just also insane. These people are crazy, totally crazy, but I love them all, you know?
It was insane. And you have to start with that belief and the inspiration. But the difference, like from an actor's perspective, like if you're given a script that's okay, or a script that truly inspires like a performance that you want to go share with the world, it's a lot more interesting to go do a script that brings something new out of you and that pushes your limits and has the chance to bring out a performance that's like unique and that you're longing for. And so if you can get a script that hits people that way of like, oh, I need to see this, or oh, this is so grounded in something that I understand and want to portray, like that is with Vampire, I think that is how we got so many really professional level actors who are still at the beginnings a lot of the time in their career, but who are like succeeding and getting booked and all that sort of stuff. We got them to believe in us because the roles are so unique and there's like real genuine character growth in Vampire, believe it or not. There really is. And so that like the belief and the inspiration you can get is step one, and that's what's going to make if once again, like if somebody's making, oh, this is one of the coolest scripts I've ever gotten to work on, then they're going to adjust the light a second time just to get the lighting a little better. But if they're making, oh, John wants to tell this story and I'll do it for him, but it's kind of a bullshit script, they're going to probably let the light sit, wherever it was the first.
You're gonna have some shaky shadows in there.
And it's really asking so much from your crew that you need to like
That's
you need
true.
them to be respected and inspired. And we were able to do it with a fully local crew, and that was I really accredit that to having been in the community for so long and having made so many individual connections with the people who we really knew, had the talent to be like the best. They could be like, but we needed to have like a real legit sound guy. We couldn't just bring whoever was willing to come do sound. That was one point where like we didn't have a lot of sound guys to pick from, so we really had to make sure that we found like the local sound guy who was the best for our project. But yeah, I don't know, like Eugene is just big enough that we were able to put together that group of 25 talented crew members.
Mm-hmm.
It's
And
awesome.
some
That's a
of
good
them had
number.
never done the job that we were asking them to do before, but they were willing to step up and learn it and
push
donate,
themselves and grow
weeks, you know, of their time to it. And that was another limitation, is like you guys have experienced, a lot of us have day jobs, a lot of us are taking PTO to do this stuff, you know, a lot of us are ultimately not making films every day, we're making coffee, you know, for other people every day. So to even like, you know, yes, we've got this great, you know, amount of people, but then like, how many actors are really even the right age range, and then how many of them really fit the role? Or we have all these great crew members, but who can take 3 weeks off, you know, for September this year?
Totally.
And then, you know, who's willing, you know, like even if you can. So we really had to, like, I think it, as Malachi was trying to say, like, we were really fortunate to have like the amount of people to pick from, but that's not all of it either. You have to find that handful of people who are, you know, all of those things, and also safe and ethical to work with, and, you know, fun even to be around, you know.
Sure.
I know it seems like a low bar, but yeah, when you're on set together,
it makes a huge difference. Yeah.
It's so big when you can actually enjoy everybody's company and,
yeah,
you know, give everybody hugs and support in more ways than just like, great job setting up that light.
Yeah.
Yeah, just being there for each other a little more, like on a human level, was something that we really got to do on this
set,
because we'd been really, you know, particular.
Well, and it sounds like a lot of you know a lot of each other from before even coming to work on this project. And one of the things that I've always talked about with indie filmmakers is that you can see in a project when a cast is meshing well, right? And what we find with a lot of indie directors is they like to stick to a core cast. And so, you know, project after project, you just see that whole, the love and the energy and the synergy, I'll say, to, that comes with everybody knowing each other, being genuine friends with each other and enjoying each other's company and presence and work and supporting each other. And it just spills out on the screen, and you see it, and it makes for that much more of an enjoyable film.
Yeah, I think everyone is probably thinking about Quentin Tarantino as we talk about this too, because he's one of the guys at the larger level who does the thing. He wants to work with the same actors. And I was a bit of a cynic, not going to lie, before Vampire, where I was like, no, I'll never do that. It's always going to be whoever's best for the role, and that could never be the same actors twice. But after working with this group of people, it really did make me realize I had kind of called my shot a little too soon there. Mm. Like, a lot of these folks are so talented and easy to work with that I totally see why you would want, you know, to ultimately just be able to trust in an artist to even take on a role, just because you would love to see them in it.
Yeah.
I feel really like now I can totally see why people would want to work with the same cast over and over again. I would always want them to be the perfect pick for the role, but it also opened my eyes that maybe I was being a little too cynical and thinking they couldn't.
Yeah.
And really, I was really fortunate to have worked with such an incredible cast of young people and have my eyes opened in that way. Because now, you know, if I had stayed the way that I was, I wouldn't have six amazing artists that I could now call again to come work on my next movie, or even just one of those people to come work on my next movie, because you've kept the relationship good. You've taken them through this crazy process, but you've respected them the whole time. And so if you can, you know, have that energy moving forward on your next movie, I actually think that's an incredible thing as a director or a producer, to have people who are willing to come back and work with you again, especially at an independent level. So I have a lot of respect for artists like that, and I would like to be one of them. And you know what, Paso, you didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah, I have a feeling Malachi is going to be doing a bunch of like special appearances and everything.
Oh yeah, he's not getting
away. Yeah, no, bus driver in one.
I will do my time. Exactly. No matter how big I get, I'll keep
better come back to Pat Films. Yeah.
And I think like with especially like with Greg Sestero, who came on our set,
that's a great name. I wanted to move into the casting eventually, but yeah, that's a great name to add to your cast.
He's just an example of that type of guy who is really forged in like the indie cult setting, and to this day is just fully willing to support that and go back to it. And it really feels like kind of like paying your dues. Like that's how you like hand it off to
almost like a year. Like a pay it forward type thing, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm signed on for that for sure. But Vampire just caught, I think we really, the group of actors that went into it, I think we're all really tuned into this same like frequency, the same kind of vibe of the tone of the acting that would really fit for Vampire. And I believe that it was like a really, there's so much camaraderie and inspiration from seeing the way that each of these people took their characters. It just kept kind of elevating each of our roles bit by bit, because nice. We were all locked in like that. And we all became like, you know, really close based off of it too, very quickly. And that helped the performances to stay really good. And the more intimate scenes that we ended up filming like halfway through the process, we were so, they were so like not vulnerable, but like they were, we were so ready for that vulnerability by that time, because we had all just vibed so well, which I'm really thankful for. It's like being amongst a group of people who are all that inspired by their role as an actor, it's like you got your little gang with you. Like it's really cool. I ended up giving everybody Pokemon stickers.
That's nice. Awesome, dude. How many people could say that they were given Pokemon stickers on set? You know what I mean? That's awesome.
Gotta be your signature new move now, man.
And they were like, I was like, this, like, you get Growlithe because you're so loyal and you are going to grow into the most powerful, you know, fire Pokemon.
The Pokemon version of spirit animals. I like it.
Yeah, and you are Ivysaurus.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was good.
Okay, so go for it. Mm-mm. So I'm curious then, so we've got a good mix of cast, you know, we know what we want to do. What is Vampire and how does it come about story-wise?
So Vampire is, in brief, no spoilers, about a community college professor and his group of students going out into the woods to prove the existence of a rare fanged deer species, the musk deer, which really exists. But they do not exist in the Cascades. So they find evidence that maybe there are musk deer in the Cascades, and they go out on a weekend field trip to prove this, but ultimately they run into not a musk deer, and in fact a monster that is far more than they bargained for, a vampire. So that's where like the plot kind of goes. It's very quirky, it's very campy, but all of the characters are there for like heartfelt, well-motivated reasons. So it really does like kind of wrap you up in this world of like, we're just going outside. But a lot of the like horror of the movie comes in when they start interacting with nature without that kind of divide that we have as a culture between man and nature. When they start to realize like, you know, this is the real world out here, and the way that we interact with it matters. And we're no longer so protected by walls and social norms, and things like our vulnerabilities start to appear, like getting bug bites and your acne not being able to be covered up and stuff like that, that at first it becomes just uncomfortable. But once they realize that like all these little petty crimes that they may be doing against nature are actually being witnessed by this nature incarnate, you start to realize that like maybe those crimes aren't so petty after all. Hmm. And maybe we're not so safe as this cultural divide from nature makes us believe. And maybe if we were to go out into the woods, then we too would find far more than we bargained for, just like they did, metaphorically.
Is that like, was that the intent with writing the story?
Well, the very first aha moment, we were just like, holy shit, musk deer exist. What if they're vampires?
You're like, what if vampires weren't are just freaking fang weird. Bats, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What if they were like anything that's fanged?
And yeah. So we played with that just really funny concept for a while. And then growing up in Oregon, there's a lot of interaction with wildlife and with deer, because there's a bunch of national like forest grounds around every city. So kind of playing with this idea of like, oh, they're seen as a prey animal. Usually you assume they're afraid of you, but what if there was something kind of lurking beneath that and they were actually the predator and you needed to watch out for them? So we played with those concepts and we're big horror fans. So we ended up just wanting to write like a fresh, enjoyable horror script that had a good conclusion and had good acting and great gore moments. And like, you know, we really wanted to make like the type of horror film that we dream of, that like very many horror films get close to, but then like fail at just in one little way. And so we're like, nah, we can make one that finishes its swing. And
nice.
So we really wrote it as passionate artists, to be like a love letter to more campy films and more past like 90s and 80s horror that we grew up on. And yeah, it started out as this really silly idea, and then it became more and more grounded as we tried to, as artists, tell just like a story that would be universally impactful, hopefully.
I like that because don't hear this the wrong way, and I don't want to discredit the more, how do I want to say this? The ecological impact side of the story, right? Because there's value there, and I think people need to pay attention to that stuff. But I think what happens is if you start there, then you just kind of hyper focus there. Whereas if you start with horror and I want to make something that's campy and gory and fun, and then it just kind of you accidentally fall into elements of this, the social aspect of it, then it's more genuine in that sense, and it doesn't feel like so forced down your throat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like I've hesitated to call the vampire an eco warrior because I feel like that tends to get taken the wrong way. One thing I really wanted to push forward with vampire and not Bambi vampire, right? It's like we've drawn some inspiration from not really the cartoon, but the book by Felix Salten. So
Okay.
the original novel is not like the cartoon that we all grew up loving. The
A
original
lot of
novel
those Disney movies are not. The
Yeah,
Little Mermaid
exactly.
is the one of the most common ones.
Dark, dark,
Hey, wait a
dark.
minute.
Yeah,
Wait a
a
minute
hundred
here.
percent.
I'm not too proud to admit that I might have shed a tear or two in Bambi when,
Oh,
not
what
discrediting
did
that, you know what I mean?
It was pretty violent, if you ask me.
So one of the things that I've tried to stay away from with Vampire is this idea that it's man versus nature. And that's what
Right.
Bambi, the cartoon, is all about. But the original novel is actually not a man versus nature story. It's an allegory for how nature is violent and survival based for every living being that does survive it. So they include humans in this horror of, look at this incredibly chaotic natural world that we're all a part of, where a forest fire can happen and your house is destroyed, but so is theirs. All the critters in the woods, right? That's something that the cartoon doesn't touch on so much. It really discludes man from the equation. And one thing that Vampire, I think, does really well, for what it is actually bring you into this world where you realize like this isn't all their fault. This isn't a story where everyone just gets what they have coming to them. A lot of the story is about how they've walked in to this situation that turns out to be a lot more dangerous than they're ever taught. And so that's like kind of where that eco warrior side comes in, but it's not versus humans. It's not like humans are this evil thing that's coming in and ruining everything. It's more
Right.
of a commentary on this separation that we have with nature, where we really just don't acknowledge how dangerous the natural world is. And we kind of like protect ourselves from it to a pretty extreme degree and just don't really relate with it as much anymore. And that was probably inspired by growing up in, I grew up in Alaska. So up there, you can't go on a hike without people telling you how dangerous it is out there. It's like you fall into a crevasse in a glacier, and they're like, this is something that they worry about when you like go on a hike for lunch. So it's a totally different world than what you grew up with here, where people do just go like knock around in the woods, and it is just right outside of town. Like my right outside of town was like 10,000 more miles of rural wilderness where anything can happen, and if you take a wrong turn, you really are kind of screwed. So that's the world that I wanted to bring these kids into, instead of making it like, oh, it's the outdoor world versus the indoor world. It's saying, no, this is our world, and we've actually created a separation from it that gives us the illusion of being safe.
Yeah.
And I wanted to destroy that.
So how
Quality
does
narrative.
that world, right? How does that world become 1997?
Good question. So I loved the idea of doing it as an era piece because it did give this feeling of we don't know what's in our woods to do it as an era piece. So it felt appropriate. Whereas now we're a lot more based in satellite imaging and everything's online and you can always look it up right there at the drop of a hat. But in the 90s, no, you could not. And so some of the like not having the technology, not having a phone, not having, no one has like a personal phone, or if they do, they're like an odd rich person
Zach
who has a flip
Morris.
phone.
Yeah, the old Zach
That's right.
Morris phone.
Exactly. We have the Samsung, like the original Samsung flip in our movies. So
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, like we kind of loved playing with that, like that the tech wasn't there, and so the knowledge sometimes wasn't there, and you know the school oversight wasn't all there. And then on top of that, we were working with Taylor. From like day one, we were going to bring this thing into production, and we were going to do it with this guy, as our director and as one of the leaders on this project. And he is a 90s fanatic. He's totally a nostalgia guy. He's got so much good information about the era in general in a broader sense, but also he lived through it and was like these characters' ages when they were in college. So for when he was in college in the 90s. So he was just a huge part of us making that decision. And a reason why we kind of thought we could pull it off at our level was because, you know, alone, that's a lot of research. It's a lot of dramaturgy, for lack of a better word. It's a lot of just trying to familiarize yourself with a period you didn't live in. Even if you existed during the 90s, you weren't a college student in our case. So we had to really like utilize him as a resource and say, what was that world like? So that we can do it justice. And he's a big part of why we actually have managed to do an era accurate 90s movie at such a low budget and with no time.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
get
I
you.
mean,
he's definitely legit. Like, you got a good
Yeah.
one with that. I've seen some of his other things with the last blockbuster and everything, like, definitely on point. It just appeals to me so much because that's my jam right there.
Oh yeah. Like I said earlier, Alan and I are we're in our mid-40s, so the 90s was that was us. That was us. Yeah.
That was you guys. You could have
Heck
been in my
yeah.
movie.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Still can.
I saw somebody in the teaser walking with like a Discman in their hand. I was like, oh my God. I remember that struggle of like, okay, don't hold it at a certain way because then it's gonna skip and you're
Yes.
only limited to like 12 tracks and just put the repeat button on and it'll just keep going. It's totally fine.
Yeah, like I was born in the 90s, but ultimately I lived so rural that my video store would never get the new releases until like months after they would come out. Like years. It was ridiculous. We like wouldn't even get them normally. And everything stocked in there was a 90s movie and below. So
Nice.
like everything I grew up watching was like not of my era unless it I like came from Canada, like randomly, was like sent there by just
Or
like some
blast from the
nice
past.
people. Yeah, exactly. Trying to bring us some of the culture in the world. So
Nice.
it was definitely a love letter for those shelves of 90s films that I grew up loving.
Okay, so tell the horror fans out there what we can expect from Vampire from like a blood and guts and gore perspective.
Lots.
Severed limbs,
Yep.
decapitations,
Yep.
very brutal puncture wounds.
Also cartoon gore. So we've got practical gore, but we've also got awesome animated
Yeah,
gore.
what's up with that? Because I noticed in the teaser or in the intro video that it's like a Bloody Disgusting called it the cross between Evil Dead 2 and Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Roger.
You see it in
One of my
the tr
faves.
Yeah, you see it in the teaser trailer you guys got on your Indiegogo. Like, where did the idea come in to like incorporate animated aspects to this live action movie? Because that's a very
So,
90s thing too, so I'm curious.
yeah, well, we know.
That's one of those things that we stayed creatively open to how we were going to achieve the script, and that was one of the
That
solutions
makes
that popped.
sense.
So when we very first wrote the script, it's like, okay, we're going to keep it young people. We're going to not too many characters. They're mostly set outside. But then we wrote in animals, and our first idea is, hey, we'll use like obviously fake puppet animals and kind of have this cheekiness to it. Or maybe we'll use puppet animals that just like wipe the screen, but you never really see that they're fake. And we started playing with how we could get the most out of that. But then pretty quickly decided, hey, we want to go with like a high quality professional level practical gore. And so these animals being super fake, but then all the gore being good, it might not have quite fit well. And we kept trying to explore our options for some of the biggest stunt and like physically dangerous moments, as well as all these animals. How are we going to pull them off? And we really just came to this like aha moment where we realized it could add to the piece if we animated them. It could give it this really unique vibe and feel very reminiscent of like something that they were doing in the 90s.
For
And
the
then
same reasons.
it
Yep.
would allow us to
Yeah.
just have these animals do exactly what we want and not have to really sacrifice any of the moments that we wrote into the script. Like there's some small moments where just like wasps are like mating while they sting each other on a rotten apple. And we're like, I don't know if we can set that up or not. The funny thing is we actually did get, I think, a practical version of that shot, but we weren't expecting.
Did you hire a wasp trainer or something?
There is an abundance of wasps, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was one of our like million challenges that occurred. Like, we did really good keeping our like internal environment positive with all of our cast and crew, but we faced so many external challenges that should have shut our production down for multiple days, like, and a different big one every day is what it felt like. And I don't know that that was just a feeling. I'm pretty sure there was like a big, almost production ending event almost every day that we showed up to set. So just crazy that we were able to problem solve through most of those. But one of those things was a million wasps where we were trying to shoot. We had filmed there the day before and we had accidentally dropped some meat into our campfire.
Nice.
And had left, I guess, this tiny piece of meat in the campfire. And the next day we show up to film the remaining million scenes that we have to go at this site. And it is covered in 3 million wasps. It was insane. We were like, this is, how are we going to fight this? Like, our director, beautiful Taylor, he was really afraid of wasps. Like, has had some incidences in the past where it was, like, really traumatizing. And we had two people who were allergic, deathly allergic. So we spent, like, we redid our shooting schedule for the day. And then, like, one of our grips, lovely, lovely Rebecca, spent the rest of that afternoon just trying to get rid of, like, 10 million wasps from where we're supposed to shoot. And it was just insane, guys. It was,
I can
insane.
Just so that see her out there just like herding wasps, you know, like, so yeah, way, come on this way.
You need to get like all the wasp traps you can.
Yeah.
And then you also want to start baiting them with other enticing foods, but that are far enough away to where like, okay, go eat my half a sandwich, just not on set.
You know what will get these wasps out of here is the thing that brought them in the first place. Let's just bring in more of that.
Yeah.
I got a meat fire. I am just a big dumb idiot. So I was out there at first, just like I had a piece of like scotch broom that I'd ripped out of the ground and I was just swiping at them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it did not help at all.
I just pictured someone with like a chub of ground beef, like putting a little trail out of the campsite.
Honestly, that's the meta. That's how you feel.
Yeah. If you guys ever say this.
Got
please
it.
No.
Got just it.
Honey, not vinegar.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Great. So, I'm excited to see what comes of it because we are big fans of gore and indie horror. And if you're telling us that that's what we're going to expect, plus, you know, some of this other stuff, especially the animated parts. And I'm super excited to see what the final product is going to look like. Where are you guys at production wise?
Currently, we are raising funds to finish post-production. So we've started to work with our animator a little bit, just getting him going, making sure our styles match up, and we're loving what we're seeing so far. But until we finish fundraising, it's very difficult to just push forward because we ultimately don't have the funds to pay them, and we want to make sure that these artists are getting what they deserve. So we've put everything into the project that we have. And this is how far we've gotten. We've managed to film the movie. We've taken care of all of our most intense shoots. We have maybe 2% of filming left to do, and it's mostly just like pickups, that kind of thing, B-roll. So we've really conquered like some of the largest obstacles with making a film at this level. But it just really shouldn't be a secret to anyone out there who already is a filmmaker that filmmaking is very expensive. So obviously including animation, even if we'd gone with CGI, but ultimately, you know, doing the hand-drawn animation, it's very expensive and time-consuming. So that part of it we know is going to be a bit of a process, but our artist is willing to kind of like work with us until we can pay him. But for our editor, for our color grade artist, for our sound mixer, for the people who are going to do our music, we're going to compose for us, you know, all of these professionals, we are still looking for funds to be able to finish this movie. So as awesome as we know that it is, and we can look and just like love this archive of footage, it is not a movie yet. And that really is like still a big obstacle for us, is that we know we've captured incredible gore. I mean, I love horror, and that was something that I wanted. I was like, no way are we doing all cartoon. No way. We have to have some real blood. Some fake blood.
I guess there's real blood of mine in the film for sure.
Coming from all those wasp stings.
There's a scene where I go through a whole field of blackberries and we had cleared a path through it, and I had kind of tried to fake it of like, oh, ow, that blackberry snagged me. But it wasn't working. I wasn't able to pull it off. So I just one take decided, like, you know what, screw this. I'm just gonna run through these blackberries.
It's great.
Way to commit.
It turned out really well. It was worth it. Very well.
So speaking of money, looking at the Indiegogo, and that's been open for a couple of weeks now, and that's getting ready to close April 12th, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have the perks changed at all since you opened it to where they're at now?
We have added a few. Okay. As of just a couple of days ago, we added a VHS perk where you can purchase Vampire on VHS.
Oh, I know VHS Doom was like all about that. So
yeah.
Nice.
We're very excited. People have been definitely like begging us for that one. Let's see. Is that the...
We did like our we released our sticker pack is something that you can now order kind of on its own, because we noticed that like some folks who wanted them didn't realize they were an add-on. So we added that as our perk. So you can go pick up Vampire stickers, have them shipped to the city near you.
Those look gnarly.
Yeah, they're pretty sick.
And we're trying to come up with like all the... We have a bunch of ideas and we're kind of like... pitting them against each other to see who comes out on top of like what are the other best perks we could offer. So we definitely have plans to roll out like a whole handful of more really cool things.
For our writers out there, one of our suggested perks that may come out in the next few weeks is a copy of the screenplay. So if you want to read, you know, the original words, then you can at least see where something like Vampire started, you know, versus where it came.
Sure.
You know, it's a pretty big journey.
If I might suggest, everybody likes signed stuff. So if you throw a lot of signatures on there,
I'll sign move. It like 8 times.
Who do you want me to sign it as?
I could be anybody.
So let me call out something that I don't see on your Indiegogo, which we usually normally see. And that is roles. Walk-on roles, guest roles, be in our movie, which
is...
We already got this.
I mean, there's always pickup shots or whatever, but I wasn't sure if like the Indiegogo started, you know, to help with the current production, or if it was just, hey, it's in post now, and now we need the money for just specifically post. So hence the no roles.
Yeah, it's the post thing, and this is totally like backwards towards how a lot of people run their Indiegogo campaigns, because obviously it's really risky to invest everything you have, which is like half the budget of a film, and make half of it and then ask for help with the second half. There's that huge endeavor and risk taken on. But we are really gritty artists who have been like dying for a chance to show how good we are at making films, and we just really, I think you couldn't hold us back, and we were willing to pay for it ourselves, and we just wanted to make it so bad. But what we're not as good at is like social media, or like building that fan base beforehand, because we are like, hey, we want to have some awesome art to show people. We don't just want to like get people to like us. That's harder for us. We're more shy and awkward than that. Like, it's the art that speaks the best is how I feel. So we know it's a really backwards way to do it, and a really risky way to do it, to be honest, but we just wanted to take that risk, and also wanted to put all our efforts into making like a really good film instead of putting half of that pre-production effort into just building the fan base and building the campaign up.
If I can reword what you said, by highlighting the fact that it's different for sure, right? But also at the same time, it gives you a little bit of a competitive edge, because when most indie filmmakers are putting out crowdfunding campaigns, you're relying, it's almost like a sell, right? I'm selling you on the idea of this movie. Here is the cover art for this movie. Here are the perks that you can do. Here are some of the roles that we're selling. But a lot of people are very visual learners, and so I need to be able to see what this movie actually is. I can read it all day long, but maybe if I had some scenes that go along with what you are describing, that will help me understand the quality of the product, the vision, maybe if this is this something that I want to fit into. So the video that you guys have on your Indiegogo page is I think is phenomenal because it provides all of that insight to somebody who might want to contribute to the project versus let's just hope they get it and give us money and buy a role and, you know, hopefully it works out that way. Which and don't get me wrong, I'm not discrediting that part either, because that's how a lot of people get their start, right? Is to, you know, purchase a role, come onto a movie, start networking, and then kind of move their way up the ladder in that sense. And, you know, it allows for indie filmmakers to, you know, finish their project and to get it out and for them to build their own portfolio in that way. So both absolutely have value in the marketplace. It's just, you know, it's good for you guys to see that you do have a little bit of an edge in that respect, in that you can show people this is what we're talking about.
Gosh, yeah, we have so much more to share too that we were just like dying to get put together, and we don't want to like spoil everything, but some of the coolest stuff are like the death scenes, right?
So it's
like,
well, I mean, yeah, you don't want to give away the milk for free, you know? I heard that term somewhere.
Exactly, but we've been starting to figure out what we can start to share more, just to build people's confidence more and more that like what we put together is that what we're telling you it is, like that really high quality piece of art. So we just made some cool character posters, and we're going to start releasing some little clips of all the actors auditions, because we just got a really talented group of actors. And we don't have any of like the actual audio edit done of the scenes. So this is how we can kind of start to just show what to get excited for and what to expect. So I'm really excited to be able to start sharing more and more of it, but yeah, that's exactly it. And, you know, we couldn't have done it this way if we didn't have that, like, I want to say $25,000 that we just could put into it and believe in ourselves so much that we're willing to take that risk. If we didn't have those savings, even, we would have probably had to put this whole thing together and then raise the money from ground zero.
Yeah.
So it's I respect it. No matter how
you make it, I can imagine.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it too. It's like, for all those indie artists, like, just have no shame about needing help, you know, whatever stage you're at, because it really is like, it's so expensive to pay like 15 plus people to do anything for one day.
Well,
let alone
I wanted to bring it up when we talked earlier about, you know, what it's like to actually make a movie for the first time, especially a feature length movie, right? Because usually we see a lot of like shorts. And that can be a large deterrent for people, because the idea that I need money to make a movie and I don't have a credit to my name to even, you know, warrant somebody giving me money to make something, can be, you know, discouraging. So,
it's so impossible to do anything nowadays without money. It just is.
Yes.
It's our survival. It's our resource. It's the one we've all agreed that we all should have now, instead of each of us being able to provide one thing or whatever. We all just have to have enough money to make it work. And it is like, it's hard. I mean, sometimes it in the future for us, like, we don't know what we're going to do next or how we're going to do it if Vampire isn't that thing. But when it came down to it, nobody is going to believe in you if you don't believe in yourself. And that was where I had to get to with it, was I'm asking for someone else to make an investment that I'm not even willing to make. And how does that look?
Right.
And honestly, for my story, it just so happened that like, I traded in stocks when I was really young, and for some reason got into that when I was like 14, 15 years old. And
you're like, Tesla, what is that? I'll give him some money. Sure.
You called it, brother. Like, Elon Musk paid for this movie. But it's one of those moments where it's like, nobody's ever going to give me a fucking hand up. I've never had anyone offer me something for free.
Right.
And I've ultimately taken everything that I've ever made, you know, and put it away and reinvested in myself, and had no idea what I was saving for. Like, quite honestly, I was like, oh, retirement, you know. But when it comes down to it, it's like, do I really want to like keep all of my savings for retirement, or do I want to live a little, you know? And it really was a question that I had to ask myself, because sure, I'm young. Like, I get that, but the world's scary for all of us, man. There are young homeless people out there. So it really doesn't matter how old you are. The world is not easy to live through.
Yeah. 100%.
And so when it came down to it, I had to realize, like, if I'm going to tell my story, if I'm going to get the opportunity that nobody gets, well, then I might have to buy it for myself. Like, doing whatever it takes for however many years that needs to happen. But that was my attitude, was whatever it takes to get there. And if it turned out, like, it turned out that I had to really double down and invest in this story, in myself, in the project, and I didn't have any guarantees. I had a great team, but I didn't have guarantees that that team wouldn't get sick, or that our actors wouldn't get COVID on the flight over and not be able to work, or that, you know, even I might break my ankle or something. And we're filming in the middle of the woods. Like, I couldn't be out there on a set of crutches. None of us could. Right. So if they got hurt during stunts, if anything went wrong, shit canned. All, like, the whole opportunity would have had to be flushed, because we would not have had the money to bring even one of them back a second time.
Yeah.
Like, we spent every penny that we had on this thing.
Maybe raise the money beforehand.
But I think there is some... being able to believe in yourself and say, you know what, even if this fails, I am worth betting on.
Right.
And I would be worth betting on a second time. And God damn it, I would invest that money again, even if I didn't know that this thing was going to continue, because the experience was so positive. And I think sometimes people just need to hear that, that, like, it that can really be worth it to say, fuck it, and put something on the line, and to say, this is how much this means to me to get to be able to do this. It means everything. And if you're saying it means everything, well, God damn it, you better be willing to give everything up for it, because the universe very well may ask you to ante up. Did for us, you know, and I would do it again. That's bottom line.
Damn, like, now I want to go out and just fucking take over the world. You know what I mean?
Let's go.
You gotta build it, and they will come, you know. And with, as an artist who is not yet being paid for their art, it's like, build it and they will come. You have to just keep believing in what you're doing.
Yeah.
In your skill set.
Well, I also see the way that you guys went about it gives you a little bit of the advantage also, in that you did what you could do when you could do it, right? Like, sometimes people wait for that perfect opportunity for the stars to align, bring everybody in, and then go from one step to the next step to the next step. And, like, if you can't afford to do that, that project never gets off the ground.
Exactly. It's just a dream.
Yeah.
Doing what you got to, doing exactly what you got to do. I should have started the podcast with this question, and I didn't. What was the first horror movie that really sparked your interest in the genre?
Sparked my goat. I wasn't a big traditional fan of horror. I'm really, like, sensitive. And when I was growing up, a few horror films totally fucked me up. Like, The Ring, and also, for some reason, Signs. I went home after watching
that movie. Scary, dude.
Those fingers under the door.
Yeah,
exactly. Me and my mom were living
the aliens
in this,
walking,
like,
across the backyard in the birthday party
that,
scene.
That found footage.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take baths.
It stinks. No, but we had to walk. We, like, parked, and then it was like a half a mile walk through just the dark forest on, like, a dirt trail to the little cabin we lived in. And we had just watched Signs, and it was just me and my mom. And I was just like, Mom, I don't know if I can protect you. I don't know if you can protect me from these guys. Like, it really messed me up. So I found a love for horror later in life, after really knowing that I wanted to be an actor and looking at films in kind of a whole new way, like, you know, as, like, an art form, and really breaking them down and digesting them as the art form. And one of the first... for me, one of the first horror films, I was probably like 18, 19 when I watched it, is just the original Halloween. And it really boils down just to the eeriness of that opening sequence, and where you're outside the house and then you go back around and in it. That mixed with, like, the lore that is built by Loomis talking about Michael Myers in just these vague ways of, like, the lore where they built up, like, oh, evil created this guy. Made him grow bigger, and it made him unkillable. That, to me, I'm a big, like, nerd in general, and, like, lore and history, or, like, magic and how does it work, really gets me. And so, yeah, something about that original Halloween, and just, like, the intensity of Dr. Loomis.
Yeah, that's my wife's favorite horror movie. And, like, even she will play the theme music in, like, the middle of July while she's, like, getting ready to go out. Just, like, she'll just bump it. It's so good.
I mean, the first horror movie that I ever watched was The Descent. And it holds.
Nice. So good.
Yeah, but I was, like, way too young when I started watching horror movies. And I, like, ultimately, I think, like some folks out there, at the very least, I grew up pretty sheltered. I lived in a very small town where, like, crime was, like, a joke. It was literally like we would like read the police blotter like it was the Sunday funnies. Like it was like they would try to make us laugh. It was weird. Okay. So like,
they're like, can you believe this dude? What he did?
Yeah, they're like, yeah, this guy was drunk on Broadway and you'll never believe what he did. You know, and it's like a gossip column or something. Yeah. It's like, oh, it really wasn't a part of my life that the world was an exceptionally dangerous place, except for all the crevasses and predators out there, like bears.
The world itself. Like,
yeah, like the literal environment was a bit testy, but like the city wasn't, you know, an unsafe place to live. So I feel very privileged in the sense that I grew up somewhere that I really feel like I got to have a bike ride and staying out all night kind of childhood. But horror movies for me, like, represented the rest of the world. Like, that was all that crazy, scary weirdness that I almost like didn't really understand, but also like dealt with these sensations that I never really had to feel, like discomfort or unease or suspense or anxiety, like some of these things that like were really kind of distant from my world, I got to overdose on, you know. And that sensation, I think, is what I really fell in love with. And one of those, like, I love The Descent. That's the first horror movie I ever watched. That's where I was like, oh my God, it's all about women. They're going underground. That's so sick. I want to do that. Oh, but no, I don't, turns out.
How do you not get freaked out, though? Because you live in an area where if you go on a hike and you can fall into a cave, and here's a movie about these girls who go on a hike and go spelunking, and then they're stuck.
Isn't that what they tell you? They're like, you don't want to end up like The Descent. Yes. She's like, what's The Descent? Yeah.
They're know? Like, here, watch this documentary of people that used to live here, and then see if you still want to go on a hike.
Exactly. Like, so I don't know. I was like a little gritty. Like, I mean, not to borrow your word, but I had like moved to Alaska really young. And so I'd kind of like come up there with this attitude of like, don't fuck with me. Like, I'm not from here. You don't know what you're getting yourself into. I may have been 4, but I was tough.
That's right.
And so I was kind of like too big for my boots from the get go. And so searching out these horror movies just kind of felt like, my dad was like really big on horror movies. And he would tell me these stories about growing up with his uncles, watching things like even younger than when I started watching them. And so I started thinking like, oh, is that like a rite of passage? You know, am I old? Am I an adult? Are people going to think that I was a brave kid if I could handle this? And so I think that's kind of what like started me on that journey. But it wasn't until like I was older and a little more reflective that I realized like that there was such a big emotional education that I would have honestly missed out on had I not had access to cinema living where I did. And it made me realize that, like, is it really any less cathartic to have a movie that you watch just to make you laugh on a bad day, or to make you cry when you're just feeling like a little too good, or like to make you scream when you feel so safe all the time? And it just started to make me feel like, wow, isn't this actually like a really potent art form for creating those reactions in someone? And isn't that a bit cathartic? Like, even when it is a scream, but especially when it is a laugh or a cry, don't you feel a little better after that? And it just started me thinking, like, you know, there's so much baggage that I think it's put on the horror genre, but also on horror writers. And it is a dark thing that we're doing out there, trying to like make people feel these ways. But it also gave me more of an appreciation for where I came from, that I was able to create a world that was different than the one that I was living in. And to have like that be my inspiration, I would just encourage anyone out there who has that like shadow, you know, to just really like take some time with it, because I found out a lot about myself through exploring this medium. And, you know, even though like The Descent, like I said, was one of my first favorite movies, like the one that like sticks with me the hardest is The Shining. And it's that scene where she is, Shelley Kubo goes downstairs and she's looking for Jack Torrance, and she finds the stack of paper that says, "All work, no play makes Johnny a dull boy. All work, no play makes Johnny a dull boy." And I like, ever since that happened, I've like in that moment, right in the movie, you're like, this guy's not good. But I hadn't read the book yet at that point, so I didn't know how not good he really was. And I've never like felt such a sense of dread for that woman than when she found that stack alone, and you realize your husband's fucking psycho, and it's the middle of winter, and you've been terrified of him for months, but you didn't know why. And it's not even violence, right, in that moment. It's just discovery. It's not You don't need to like hurt someone in front of me to make me feel those ways. Anything could make you feel that way. And so lines started blurring. You know, it's not all about making just a horror movie that's just, you know, to make someone feel this one way, but about making artwork that makes people feel in general, you know, and how powerful that really is when you can mess with any of those different intense emotions and actually bring them catharsis at the end.
Well, I mean, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Stanley Kubrick and Duvall, because I mean, that wrecked her, man.
Like... Oh, dude, I know. I was like, of all the things I would not want to do to a woman or an actor on my set, that is definitely one of them. But in the end, her reaction, this is not credit to Kubrick. This is credit to the actor, because God damn it, she got there. Like, right. She got there in that moment to such a high degree that I never recovered. Right. So, I hate what she went through to get there. But bottom line, that performance really impacted me.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, thanks. It's a question I like to ask everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, what was your first movie that you ever like fell in love with in the horror genre? Not to throw them back at you, but.
Well, I was lucky. Like as Paul had talked about, like I had the opportunity of living through the golden age of the 80s and horror films, so for me I was a Nightmare on Elm Street fan from the very beginning, from the jump. Nice. Like it brought like horror, comedy, the whole surreal dream world, like everything about that, the whole series is, I still geek out on it, even the second one. Even the second one, which I at first I completely rejected for like the first three quarters of my life.
So for me, man, we talked about this not too long ago. So for me, it was the original TV series It by Stephen King. And that's because for me, you know, it was one of those things where like I got to stay up late and watch it and kind of quasi supervise. And it was just, I don't know. The idea of being able to stay up late and watch something I'm not really supposed to, and then for it to be kind of centered around a scary character and story, it really, that one was like, oh shit, this is scary. But also like, I kind of love it. Like I feel kind of, I like feeling a little bit unsafe, right? So I thought it was fun. But then, so that was the, like, if I had to put a movie on it, that would be it. Literally. But then the original Unsolved Mysteries would scare the shit out of me.
The eyeball?
No, it was the theme song. The theme song scared the fuck out of me. And like every time that came on, I was just like, fuck. Is somebody going to come sit down and watch this with me? Because like I don't want to be here by myself. Like, oh my God.
You should literally pull up on YouTube the intro to Unsolved Mysteries, like back in the 80s, 90s. There's like, and it ends with like a close up of an eyeball, if I remember correctly. And that eyeball just used to creep me out. Like you're looking at me through the television, man. And this mystery hasn't been solved. Like, I don't know how to handle this.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I don't know. Just, and then the idea that those are like real stories, you know, or at least like, you know, the way that Robert Stack told them, like, I honestly thought that they were real. And I mean, they are, but like, I'm sure there's, you know, it's TV, so there's gotta be some exaggeration to it, but I don't know. I'm too young, right? That movie, that show came out in like,
it's real
87. So, you know, I'm 6, 7 years old watching this scary ass show with the scary ass music, hearing about these real right scary before ass the stories.
Simpsons. I'm trying to watch the Simpsons at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock.
Gosh, yeah, I hope it's
I gotta gut through this horror to get there. I kind of like it though.
So, any idea on when, you know, kind of ballpark when we might be able to start seeing, you know, a little bit more, or maybe the projected kind of release date for the movie, so people can kind of keep an eye out? I would imagine the best way to keep in touch is follow the Instagram, you know, check in on the Indiegogo, stuff like that, right? Be involved. But outside of that, what can people look forward to?
So we're currently looking like we will meet our fundraising goals. Thank you, everybody. Very cool.
I did see. Okay, so hold on real quick. I don't remember her name. So I'm going to look it up real fast. But I did see that Diane Franklin is in the movie, right? So we didn't even talk about the cast, but Diane Franklin is in the cast, right? And she's most notably known for being in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Yeah. And then I saw that on the
Stellar Princess.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it was girl crush of all time.
I saw on the Indiegogo that you guys had 96 backers and were 69% funded. And so seeing those two things immediately it urged me to want to post something on Instagram that had like, you know, a Bill and Ted meme of, you know, 69 and then kind of highlighting the Indiegogo and the fact that Diane Franklin's there. It just all kind of just came together real nice.
Thank you.
So go on and make that part. But yeah, we do have Diane Franklin. She was incredible. She's actually in a scene right before one that Malachi's character Branson is in. So we actually all kind of got to act with her, or at least alongside her in the same hallway.
Like
Yeah. It's got like to breathe her air.
Yeah.
She walks in and I'm walking out.
So it was really cool to like have this amazing person come on set, and ultimately like she was so just impactful as a person too. She was so encouraging, she was so supportive. Obviously, like, she also has done a lot of indie film work, even up till modern day she's doing a lot of indie film work, so she's very supportive of what we're trying to do out here. But I also think she really believes in this project. Like, we're not, you know, all awesome. The publicity that's happening right now, she is doing of her own volition because she just really loves Vampire is what she's telling us. So feel like really happy to have her on the team, you know, as an actress, but also as just a great human.
Yeah. So if you guys are looking like you're going to meet your funding goals, when can we, what's the kind of soft ETA, or, you know, if you have one in mind for the this goal? Movie to come out for us to see it?
Yeah. The goal is to finish and have it ready to be shown by October of this year.
Nice.
And it should be achievable as long as we keep going the way we've been going. But that should be something we can really do.
Heck yeah.
That'll be definitely early viewing for backers, and then some local release stuff. And then after that, we will be looking at all the offers we have of like what are we going to get it up on? How are we going to go from there?
Do you guys have an outlet for showing it in a theater anywhere?
We do, yeah. There's a bunch of really cool small local theaters in Eugene. Or there's two of them specifically that both are really supportive and are definitely going to help us show.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Cool. I kind of like would love for it to show locally and then show the next town over and kind of let it spread word of mouth like that and do as big of a run as we can. But we have to be so flexible with like how are we going to get this scene and also make it profitable. We're just trying to build as many options for ourselves right now as possible so that we can take a good one.
Has there been any discussion? Go ahead, Reedy.
We may be on the exact same line here. We've talked with a few people with their projects and how they're going through the festival circuits and you know how delicate that process can be sometimes with trying to balance like distribution on certain platforms versus getting the festivals. And is that something you guys are looking at potentially as a goal or?
Definitely. If we can, you know, we would love to be able to afford to enter the festival circuit. For anyone who doesn't know, it's very expensive. So it is like another investment that we would need to make, but we're willing to make it if that's going to be the best outlet. In our case, we do have a couple connections at different distributing options that could come through in a big way, but we're still not sure what we want to do as artists moving forward. Like, it's really important to us that this piece of art is well represented, that it's shown in a positive light, and that if we do select a distribution deal, that they're very respectful toward everyone who is involved and also like toward ourselves. So we have high standards in the sense that like, we really love this thing. You know, we did it because we wanted to make something that we wanted to see and we want everybody to get to see. And so we want to pick that outlet, even if it does take longer, that's just going to get it out there to the most people in like the easiest way for them to access it. And maybe that is streaming, but for us, it hasn't it's crossed our minds that maybe the best thing for an indie horror flick like ours is to self-release or to look for some other creative outlet or to do the festival system just to even get a few accolades so that we're taken more seriously by those distributing outlets that are an option for us, but we just want to make sure that it's the best option for Bampire.
The story we hear often with indie filmmakers as it relates to film festivals, it's a double-sided coin, because on one side it's a really great way to get it in front of people, get the word of mouth going, to get some visibility on it. But then at the same time, a lot of the festivals will ask you to not show it anywhere because they want exclusivity to their festival. And so that minimizes your ability to do whatever you want with your art because, you're taking a risk that this other avenue is going to be more advantageous. And sometimes it is. It depends on the project and it depends on the vision and where you want to take it. So I think it's important to weigh those pros and cons before you make any kind of decision.
One thing that we are looking at though, as like a fun avenue that we've considered, is actually doing like a year of cons and like going right to the people that we know want to see horror and just selling it word of mouth as like a physical piece of media, like a DVD, at least for a little while, because like those are our people. Like those are the people who are going to love what we did for what it is. And we think that it's going to be a stunning piece of artwork. So ultimately, as much as we would love to get the accolades and stuff, we also think that it really does have a shot at just capturing the heart of its fans and maybe even kind of lighting its own fire in that way and like spreading itself. And that would be really cool for us at this point in our careers, because it's how a lot of our favorite movies actually came. It's how Halloween came to fame.
Right.
So, it's not an unheard of story that like horror fans just as a globule could like help us distribute this thing just because they love the product and they want their friend to own one. And then their friend wants to own one, and on and on and on. Like it's such a cool genre in that way, because we are such big fans.
Right.
We love it. We love to see it done well, so if we can create this thing, which I feel like we have, and like, we're still in the process of, but like, I feel like that process is going really well. If we can make that thing, everything that we know it is and more, then I think there's a really good chance that it's just accepted as an independent piece of artwork. And for as an independent filmmaker who wants to continue making indie films and who believes in indie film as an outlet for artists, that is one of the last uncensored ways to put like movies into the market right now, I would love to have that happen. That's the dream. Everything else is another way of going about things. But if the fans really made this happen for us, then that's our audience. Those are the people we made it for. That's who's on our crew, our horror fans. So yeah, like we would really love to like be able to put it in the hands of our fans and like take it to the people, if you will, and say, hey, what do you guys think? Because honestly, you're the audience. Like your opinions matter a lot more to us than even the festival circuit. Like we would still walk, if we believe in this piece of artwork and we walk away from the festival circuit with no awards, we're not going to believe in it any less. So that's where we're kind of like, maybe people would just
believe
see that
in
too.
Those festivals less though, if that's the case.
Man, I gotta say those things can sometimes be a little political, for at least from what I understand, because there's some quality stuff that gets out there that doesn't get the right love and attention. At least maybe, it's hard because there's a little bit of bias in there, right? We as fans and I don't want, investors is not the right word, but there are some things that we have a stake in and we believe in the product and we know the quality that's behind it. And then for it to get no recognition in the sense of no awards, like not even, I don't know. It can be fishy for sure.
Nepotism is very real. And it's just the way that people function. Even like people like to give credit and give opportunities to people who they like.
And who they want to work with.
Yeah, true.
It's unfortunate and it's deeply hard to avoid though, and like art can't be judged and scored anyway, so if anybody ever gets a bad review from any sort of critique about their art, it's like, don't listen.
You know those old mottos, right? There's no bad press, right?
No bad press, and people would ruin your art by trying to give you constructive feedback,
right?
A lot of the, if they don't see the vision, they might be the issue, very much so. Don't always show you are to one person and then take their feedback as what everyone would think.
Yeah.
Good point.
And what
Good
doesn't point. Kill you makes you stronger, you know?
Let's go.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but we'd love to do the festival certificate and then be able to self-release, but also only if we can make sure everybody sees it.
So. Yeah, 100%.
You guys know we got the Uncle Lloyd is in Vampire?
I know, dude. I saw that. I know.
I saw that.
So awesome.
How did we do that? What?
Yeah, he's great like that. So we're good friends with a local producer here in Hollywood. His name is Ryan James. He is, his production company is Pink Plaid, and he's behind a lot of different projects like Cannibal Comedian, Area 5150. So Cannibal Comedian, the director, Sean Heights, those are his films. He's got a short out right now that's won a few awards in some of the festivals called Thumper's Revenge. So it is Bambi and Thumper that are having a tea party and horror ensues. It's not available for general consumption. It's just been out in the conventions and stuff and the film festivals, but it's really awesome.
We gotta get that as a commercial, like for sure.
Dude, that's yes.
So funny.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
No, it's great. It's great. I've seen it 4 times now because we've been out to a lot of the screenings and some of the film festivals, and we do a lot of promotional work for them too. So if you just doom scroll our Instagram, you'll see a lot of that stuff on there. But yeah, so Ryan, he was involved in a documentary called Shooting Clerks, which is a documentary on the shooting of Clerks. And Lloyd Kaufman was in that too. And they went to his house and he came out and it was a whole thing. And anything you want to kind of close with, final thoughts you want listeners to take away?
www.vampiremovie.com. Even if it's after April 12th, come and check us out because there might be new perks. And also, we can't have too much money to finish this thing. So right now, our $25,000 goal is just for the bare bones. I mean, we're talking like get this thing out there to the world. Like now it's possible. But if we were able to raise additional funds, we could get stuff like rad 90s music and maybe even...
Real big fish back into the audience.
Like, we're gonna have them live in the movie. Like,
that's right.
But it's just true that like the people that we're competing against in this industry right now are not spending thousands of dollars on movies. They are spending millions of dollars on movies. And that is just very genuinely our competition. So as much as like the $25,000 is going to get us over that finish line, it's going to get Vampire out there. There are so many more fees, just like legal processes that you have to go to be able to put your movie out to the public. Like I said, with the song licensing, with just licensing in general, for some of the other things we have to start thinking about once this movie really is finished, the expenses are going to be a little endless. So even if it's after April 12th, please just know that all of your funds are going to go directly to putting Vampire out there to as many people as possible. And that process alone is an expensive one, like beyond just finishing the movie. So, you know, feel like you can go wild and just buy one of everything on vampiremovie.com, even if we're already at our goal or we're really close to it, because all those funds, like I said, are going to go right back into making sure that this product is A, gorgeous, but B, also makes it to everyone that we want to see it.
Nice.
Well, I mean, from what we've already seen and what we see where you're going, like anything can help at this point in time, because we really want to see that come
Heck
out.
Yeah.
It looks awesome. And it's right up my alley.
Monday.
All right.
Good. That's all I have to say.
Where can people find you guys?
On Instagram, we are Vampire Movie, and on Facebook, we are just Vampire, and we plan to hopefully expand the socials more, but yeah, that marketing is a lot of work, so...
Let us know. All right, well, thank you very much for spending some time with us. I know we took up a lot of your time tonight, but it was a lot of good stuff, and we are super excited to get it in front of a lot of people.
Awesome.
Thank you guys so much. Cool.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, right, we had guys. A great time.
Yeah, so, us too. Us too. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys. Have a great night. We'll see you on the next one.
Bye, guys. Bye. Talk soon.